Today on Maine Calling, new directions in poetry. It's National Poetry Month, a time to step back and celebrate the people who create music, magic, and mystery through verse. Poets often push boundaries, and the best are unafraid of exploring those uncomfortable places in our culture and one's soul. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll meet a few Maine poets who take us to new territory. They bring diverse life experience and perspectives to their work and are getting noticed for it. Some work in academia, some in completely different professions. One, Isabel Neal, was just awarded the prestigious Yale Younger Poets Award. Also, we'll learn about upcoming poetry events in Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Poetry is always evolving, and today, for National Poetry Month, we are going to meet some Maine poets who are bringing a fresh voice and pushing boundaries. Joining me for this hour, Dr. Tyree Elise Pickens, who is professor of English and Africana at Bates College, and the author of two monographs and a new debut poetry collection called What Happened Was. Dr. Rosa Lane, who is author of four poetry collections, the most recent is Called Back. Rosa is also an architect. Maya Williams is Portland's Poet Laureate Emeritus, the author of three poetry collections, including What's So Wrong with a Pity Party Anyway? Maya is also a slam poet and works with Maine Transnet. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you enjoy reading or writing poetry? What makes a poem speak to you? Is there anyone that you want to tell us about? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'll repeat that number, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for being here today. And I'll start with you, Professor Pickens. Tyree, congratulations on your debut poetry collection, What Happened Was. I see that you have written nonfiction books and academic papers. Poetry couldn't be more different. Tell me about your decision to turn to poetry.
Sure. The collection is entitled What Had Happened Was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I actually just think poetry isn't all that different. The container that I use when I think about nonfiction or academic work is that I have a job to make things crystal clear and to attempt to make messy human experience understandable through literature and through my own work. But poetry just reverses the process. So you take and make human experience as messy as human experience can be, don't attempt to distill much of what's there. So in the fact that they're opposites, I actually consider them quite close together. I've been writing poetry since I was 8 years old. And so this just was the opportunity to write in earnest after much study, after workshops and retreats and whatnot, lots of time spent alone with a page.
And that was going to be my question, whether you'd been writing poetry all along or whether you turned to poetry recently. So thank you for that answer. Maya, I'll turn to you. How do you think about the poetry that you write?
Yeah, I think of the poetry I write as a form of expression for myself, as a way to build community with the loved ones I have surrounding me, with the community that I want to build. And I'm actually not an employee at Maine Transnet anymore as of fall of 2024. I do a poetry series for them in June at the Equality Community Center on Thursday afternoons for folks who want to show up for that. But I am not an employee at Maine Transnet anymore.
Well, Maya, that was going to be one of my answers later in the program. It was going to ask people if you're interested in hearing or seeing poetry perform, where to go. But so that sounds like one of the answers. Tell me about that, and tell me about other places that you would recommend that people experience poetry, and even slam poetry, which I know you've been involved with.
Yeah, folks can experience poetry in a variety of ways by getting in touch with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, attending an open mic series I run called Port Veritas. It's a hybrid open mic space at the Equality Community Center where folks can show up online and in person. We have a group of young people who love participating in slam competitions in the New England area. So for folks who want to be involved in slam in that regard, who are between the ages of 14 and 19, folks can email me at mayawilliamspoet.com on my contact form on my website.
Dr. Lane, Rosa, you have a new poetry collection called Back. I have that correct, right? How Yes. would you describe it, and what inspired you to write it?
Called Back, first of all, the title happens to be the last two words that Emily Dickinson wrote. And what inspired the book is, first of all, I, like everyone else, was taught that Emily Dickinson was kind of a strange recluse, fragile, pining away her years in a corner bedroom based on some failed heterosexual love. And what I learned in 2019, just before the pandemic, as a result of the work, Open Me Carefully, the passionate letters of Emily to Susan Huntington Gilbert, as there was quite a homoerotic, passionate letter writing that went between these two women that opened up a whole other door. That book, which contains 250 plus letters that Emily wrote to Susan from the years of 1852 until the day Emily passed away in 1886, just remarkable. I wanted, because of the straight washing and the heterosexualizing Dickinson for more than 100 years, in coming to this new knowledge and new understanding of this dimension of Emily Dickinson, I wanted to give that part of Emily, this part that was hidden, voice. I wanted to bring that voice out and called back, and to actually call her back.
So that's why it's called Back. Tari, I didn't ask you about the themes in your work. I know that you, or I have read that you live with a disability and that you obviously are an expert in Black storytelling and language. How do you express those themes through your poetry?
Sure. So the themes of my poetry are continuations of the themes of my academic work. I think about disability and race, class and gender, and all of those get entangled in the work. One of the questions I've been receiving while I've been doing readings is, where does my story intrude into the poems, or where's my own experience? And it's kind of hard to tell. So I have a disability, but I also study disability, and not all stories, and I think everyone who writes poetry knows this, not all personal stories make good poems. And so when you start editing, there's a lot of you because you're the writer, but it's not often easy to discern when the poet or when the poem is a reflection of my own experience anymore, because it has to become a poem that speaks beyond an anecdote in that way. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there with disability as the center, with disability as a space of possibility, as a space of eroticism, as a space of creativity. And I think that's one of the perspectives I bring, partly because I live with disability, but also because I study disabilities that don't include the one that I have.
And Maya, I didn't ask you about the themes in your poetry. I understand they range from really difficult topics like suicide to uplifting ones like entertainment.
Yeah, I write a lot about suicide and mental health, especially as it intersects with Blackness and my family life. I write a lot about healing. I write a lot about how entertainment media can represent things about mental health well or not well. I write about joy when I can. I write about joy when I can, because I never want to force it. Otherwise, the poem is awful. So those are the topics that I write. I write a lot about my family. I write a lot about the currently writing a lot about pilgrimage as it relates to mental health and suicidality and religion.
I want to ask all three of you to read a poem, but first I want to ask you all three a question, and that is, and I'll stay with you, Maya. Who do you write for? Do you write for yourself, or are you thinking about your audience?
It's not a matter of thinking about an audience per se. It's more so a matter of like writing for myself and the people who remind me of myself, or the people who want to say, "Oh my gosh, me too," when it comes to writing about my loved ones, or writing within my own lane of observation of people, or actions or events. So it's not so much about an audience being considered, at least for me personally. It's just more so about how I want my people to feel and how I want to feel.
Rosa, same question to you. Who do you write for?
Yeah, interesting question. I think I write to urgency. There is something that when something is grabbing that has to be attended to. It could be a word, it could be a color, it could be a sound, it could be a piece of music, it could be a police officer or a toll booth taker. Whatever is the inspiration behind something, there is an urgent need to just hang with it, whatever happens. And I call it kind of an unpacking of that moment. And the thing that I try to do actually is get myself out of it. So that it can, the poem as a habitat can be occupied by somebody else besides me. And so it's getting myself back out of it and releasing it more. So I don't know that I think about someone I'm writing for, though called back, I can tell you that Emily Dickinson was the one I was writing for. In terms of being with a voice that had been hidden.
Tree, what about you? Who are you writing for?
Sure. So I'm going to piggyback on what Rosa and Maya have said. There's usually some sort of music, some sort of thought, some sort of observation that scratches my temple from the inside of my head, so to say. This urgent thing that's begging to be let out on paper. I tend to think of myself a little bit in the vein of observational comedians. They see things and observe them and observe their absurdity and then tell you about it. So I'm thinking about someone like Josh Johnson, who will likely be in Portland, I think, in August, or Sebastian Maniscalco, or even like Pigmeat Markham and Moms Mabley. And I think about whatever it is that has inspired the thought. So the poem that I'm going to read on air was inspired by a podcast, and I just felt like it was pushing. I'm always really gratified when I find an audience, in part because audiences can come from all over. Matthew Zapruder once said that he has to trust that because he's having a human experience, that other people also having human experiences will find his work when they need it. And so I think I operate in that trust as well.
All right. Well, I am going to ask all three of you to read a poem, but not quite yet, because on the line with us right now is Isabel Neal, who is poet and author of a book, Throne Voice, that was awarded the 2025 Yale Younger Poets Award. The announcement just came out. Thanks so much for calling in, Isabel, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You know, I know that recipients of the Yale Younger Poets Award, the list reads like a who's who of American poetry. How did you learn that you had been chosen?
Yeah, it still feels not entirely real. I got an email in February and had missed a phone call from Ray Armitrout, the judge. I had submitted my manuscript back in late summer or early fall. And yeah, it was a very unassuming email for a very, very big deal piece of news.
Well, tell us about the book. Tell us about Throne Voices and how it came about.
Yeah, Throne Voice is a book that is asking questions about the shapes and materials of perception. And it responds to those questions in part through images and the way that images transform when they're scrutinized, and then in return, how that observation is transformative for the observer.
Mm. Tell us about what excites you about poetry, not just your own, but those you read right now, at this moment in time.
Yeah, I'm interested in language kind of as its own sensory apparatus. So language that's in conversation with the body senses, but not necessarily the same. I really appreciate poetry that is working with different registers of language, so language that feels overheard or more formal. I think I'm attentive to texture in that way.
Well, Isabel, thank you so much for calling in. Poet Isabel Neal, her new book of poetry, Throne Voice, which was recently chosen for the 2025 Yale Younger Poets Award. Thank you. As promised, some poems. Tari, I'll start with you before this first break. What are you going to read?
Sure. It's a poem entitled On March 12th, 2020, Breonna Taylor. It's a drop title, which means that the title is also the first line of the poem. On March 12th, 2020, Breonna Taylor awakened after working four overnight shifts at the local ER with its loud flashes and staccato lights, a hustle she said was going to make 2020 the year of Breonna Taylor, and it is a beautiful thing that she and Kenny did what all young couples should get the chance to, that is, spend the day just chillin', chat at supper time over decent barbecue that is the best you can get outside family, and decide between playing high-stakes Uno or watching a movie, what all young couples should get the chance to when they don't choose and do both as they munch freshly baked cookies and ice cream, that is, the warm dough hugging the cold sugar wet before the movie starts, watching them curled up in bed and not know what no young couple should get the chance to, that is, what interrupts their feeling of just us, what all waits outside their love.
Tari, Elise Pickens, thank you. We'll sit with that as we go to a break, and we'll come back and hear more poetry. This is Maine Calling. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about poetry, new directions in poetry, and specifically Maine poets. My guest today, Rosa Lane, who is an author, an architect, and a poet. Maya Williams, who is recent Portland Poet Laureate and author. And Tari Elise Pickens, a Bates professor, author, and poet. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us your questions or comments to talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-356. I promised some more poems, and Rosa, I'm going to call you up. Are you ready?
Yes, I am. Would love to. Thank you. I'll read the poem, French Sardines. It begins with an epigraph from Emily Dickinson, and then I'll repeat the title, French Sardines, when my poem begins. French Sardines. Wild nights, were I with thee, wild nights should be our luxury. Dickinson, number 249. French sardines. French sardines arrive from Boston, tin-plated. Maggie levers her can cutter at the edge, jacks her hand around the lid of hunger's fulcrum. Silver-skinned and nested, their caudal fins swim a sea of marinade, white salt cured, drenched in extra virgin, beheaded and gutted by the women of Nantes. We lay each body across a soda cracker I have for days dreamed of, craving nights behind each pearly eye. We swim up the fishware, we spawn in sandy silt along the odic thighs of the Loire. We flutter our little deaths.
Thank you, Rosa. Boy, we're not supposed to have quiet on the radio, but I feel like I want to stop for just a moment and think. Thank you so much. Wow. Maya, can we have a poem from you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is an after poem. An after poem is when one is inspired by another artist. And this poem is called Power of Admission, after Anis Mochgani. I hate my headaches. Otherwise, I wouldn't try to get rid of them so often with meds and painkillers. But I do love myself. I am actively trying to love myself better. So I treat my headaches, drink water, maintain a living, trying to make people's days as well as my own. I love tulips because my mother loves tulips. I especially love the pink tulips given to me by a student after a showcase. I especially love the pink roses given to me by my fiance 6.5 years ago on our first date. The color pink deserves more praise than it often receives. I love the gift of receiving praise and giving the people I love and admire praise. I love tweeting, praise be to, as a semi-daily anaphora for poetry, fudge stripe cookies, and the word alive. There are some days I don't love being alive. There's some days I don't hate it either. What I hate are the systems that make being alive so hard for others and myself. It has taken years of training my brain in and out of therapy how to love myself as much as others. I can't stand it when friends of mine quit therapy because they get too sad. Don't they see it's working? Do you know how much of a privilege it is to be sad? I love being sad. Okay, I don't love being sad, but I love the release it gives me when joy or rage isn't available to remove my cap, whatever fluids of externalizing need to come out. Sadness becomes the best accomplice. I am trying to love sadness better. Out of all I try to love better, I make sure sadness, grief, my father are at the top of my list. I love my father. I hate how his rage has been more responsible for my family's brokenness than he'd like to admit. I love the power of admission. It's healing. It hurts too, but everything has to hurt before it heals. I still hate my headaches, but I love the lesson of healing my headaches teach me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maya Williams.
Thank you.
Maya, when you are writing, are you reading out loud while you're writing?
Oh, yeah. All the time. It helps me get it out on the page for sure.
Mm-hmm. What about the rest of you? I don't, Rosie, you're not a slam poet, but are you
I'm
creating the spoken word when you're writing a poem?
I do. And I am moving more into spoken word. And that is becoming a wonderful arena for me. And absolutely, a poem to me is not ever finished, actually, but it in order for me to kind of bring it to whatever point I can bring it to that it's at its highest form, I have to say it out loud and sing it out loud.
It's so interesting you said never finish, because I have heard that from poets before, that sometimes it's really hard to have a poem published because you never feel ready. Is that how you feel?
Yes, it indeed is. I like to think that that whoever the reader is or the person listening, the audience, finishes the poem, and that I have given, hopefully, as the poet, author, and release myself from it, that I have given enough for there to be habitation in the poem itself, for the audience or the reader to actually finish the poem, which probably each time it's read, I hope, is finished in different ways.
Tari, thoughts on this idea of when a poem can be let free into the world?
I feel for all of the writing I do not ever feel like they are done. Academic articles, books, poems, essays, you just kind of release them to do different work, I think, and sometimes you pick up the subject matter again. There's just one thought that we all keep writing the same poem over and over again, or something along those lines. And I feel like sometimes you just kind of you release it to do a different kind of work in the world. Little known fact, I actually ran a poet a slam poet's cafe in undergrad. And so I started performing poems there too. I won the only slam I've ever been in, so I am undefeated. but for me, I mean, I think to the earlier point, like poems are so close to music and so close to comedy and other oral traditions. And so I think because there are audience members or readers who will not be able to picture things inside their mind's eye because they don't like neurologically have that capability, or they see things in a fuzzy way, the words allow them to hear the music and to hear the comedy. Sometimes mine include a bit of comedy, so I always read them out loud as well. It sort of requires that, I think, to maybe even get it to a I'm using rabbit ears, get it
Air
to a
quotes.
finish. Yeah, air quotes, sorry. Get it to a finishing point.
Yeah. Joining us now is Dr. Ellen Taylor, who is a professor of English at the University of Maine Augusta. She's also a published poet and chairs the Plunkett Poetry Festival. Thank you so much for calling in, Dr. Taylor.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer, for hosting the show and for being part of Maine Public, of course, a very valued resource here in Maine. And thanks to your panelists for sharing both their poems and their thoughts on poetry.
Well, I want to ask your thoughts on poetry. Do you find that poetry is changing, and what are some new directions that you're seeing and are excited by?
That's a great question. I mean, I think poets have always been like the canaries, the truth tellers. I mean, there's no shortage of people speaking up against injustices of our times. Let's say Literal Press in Portland, for example, put out a collection of poems a few years ago responding to the pandemic, and another responding to issues of social justice. There are calls for poems on the climate, an issue that affects all of us in Maine. So, I mean, everything in our world is material, albeit quite challenging at times. And in these divided times, I think poetry can certainly unify us. It's an art of words, but also emotion. And it's that range of emotion that makes us human.
And I'm going to ask you a question I may ask Tari later in the program as well. The students you have at University of Maine Augusta, do you feel as though they're, in this world of social media where everything happens so fast, are they able to sit with poetry as they were in the past?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I don't see any differences that changes. The change I notice is that, well, now we have class sometimes on Zoom, right? So technology has allowed people across Maine and elsewhere who are place-bound to not only attend classes together, but I think Maya mentioned this, like to tune into readings. So in some ways, the poetry community is more accessible than ever before. So I noticed that change in talking with students. We're not sitting around a table anymore, but I do see them sink right into the words and the language, and the emotion has not changed, thank goodness.
Well, tell us about the Plunkett Poetry Festival. It's coming up next weekend, right?
It is, and thank you for allowing me to talk about it. I do want to say, though, that the Plunkett main festival is 23 years old now, but there have been so many other festivals that have bloomed up recently, and I think this is a testimony to how vibrant poetry is in Maine. I'll just name a few of the others before I talk about Plunkett, because, you know, Belfast has a fabulous festival in October, and Camden just began one that happens in May. There's something in Portland in the summer, and I just saw this morning on, I have to give a shout out to Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance and their newsletter on Thursday, that there's something at UNE this weekend. So we have a lot of celebration of poetry. So the Plunkett Festival is every April, and it was started in 2003 in memory of Terry Plunkett. He was a beloved English professor at UMA for over 30 years, and he also was the co-editor of the Kennebec, and people of a certain generation will remember this journal, which was really vibrant for 15 years in the 70s, 80s, and until 92, I think. Legend has it, you know, he would lay out the Kennebec in his kitchen on the counter on the floor and then print it on newsprint and bundle it up and drive it all across Maine, drop off with other poets and, you know, at cafes and saloons and convenience stores, free for everybody. So it was in that spirit that we wanted to have the festival, which would be a big celebration of poetry, of the masses, and invite everyone to read and share. Over time, we have evolved a bit and adopted some features that have become part of our tradition. And one of them is, that I'm very proud of, is an annual writing contest for all Maine high schools and University of Maine students. And inviting high school students in particular to submit their work is so important for us to nurture this next generation of Maine poets. And sometimes they read their work at the festival with the keynote, and sometimes that's some of the most moving part of the whole event. And also, I think that signature piece shows us that poetry is alive and well. We also have several writing workshops during the afternoon, a panel on poetry or some discussion. This year we're doing a new format called Two Poets, One Poem. And we have Don Potter and Betsy Scholl, two wonderful poets, who will be talking about two poems that they chose, one by each of them, and sort of really taking a deep dive into that work. We have an open mic, and then we have a keynote. So I can talk more about her.
Well, very quickly, tell us who your keynote is, Ellen.
Yeah, our keynote is Natalie Diaz. She's a remarkable poet and a teacher and also a spokesperson for Native Languages and Language and Identity. She lives in Arizona now and directs the Center for Imagination in the Borderlands at Arizona State University.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Ellen. So she's Dr. Ellen Taylor is a poet. She's talking about the Plunkett Poetry Festival coming up in a week and a half. Also teaches at University of Maine, Augusta. Thank you, Ellen. Let's see. We'll go to John calling from Woolwich. Hi, John. Go ahead. John, are you there?
Hello?
Ah, there we go. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm sorry. Thanks for taking the call. Quick question here. This great program. Thank you so much to everyone who's participating. My question is, Maine has such a concentration of incredibly beautiful, small, local theaters. And I'm wondering if you have ever worked with local theaters and if that's a reasonable venue to, share more of the poetry in a more formal setting. I'll take the question offline.
Thanks, John. I think Maya wants to jump in here. Go ahead, Maya.
Yeah, thank you so much for this question. I know that I personally had the opportunity to share spoken word poetry at the Port Fringe Theater Festival. It's an annual theater festival based in Portland, Maine. And I've also had the opportunity to act in some local plays in Maine. I'm especially interested in plays where I love the writing because I know I have to go to bed with these lines every night. So it's like, I better love this play. So there are so many opportunities where poetry can intersect with theater and has. So thank you very, very much for that question. And come see Morris McElwhite in the Tangerine Dress at Maddie's Theater and The Legend of Georgia McBride at Mad Horse Theater Company next month.
John, thanks for your question. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief email. It's not too late. talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our show today, a celebration of new directions in poetry. Joining me, three Maine poets, Maya Williams, who is Poet Laureate Emeritus, Portland Poet Laureate Emeritus, Tari Pickens, who is an author, poet, and Bates Professor, and Rosa Lane, who is an author, poet, and architect. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call at 1-800-399-3566. Rosa, before we move on to listener calls, I've got to ask you, do you find that the architecture and the poetry come from different parts of your brain, or do they come from the same part of your brain?
Oh, no, there's a nexus. I at first kept them separate on purpose because I had two different hats I was wearing, but undoubtedly they found each other, poetry and architecture. So there is a nexus in the sense that like a house or building, I see a poem as a habitat, a place to live in. And and I see that a poem has different doors in different places and may be entered into in different times in different places. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like an ecosystem in a way, where it's a habitat that kind of grows each time it's read, especially with the audience or the reader, interacting and completing it, and always trying to allow a surprise to enter the poem and turn it in unpredictable ways. So I do see it. And poetry has impacted architecture. When I was in architecture school and I was doing my studio designs, instead of drawing a sketch or working with clay and developing kind of a form or what have you, I wrote poetry. I wrote poetry from the perspective of the user who would be occupying the building.
Wow.
And so one particular project was a performance center in South San Francisco that had in its history, literally the site had been buried with old ships had come in the gold rush and no longer usable and were buried in mounds. And so to let the performance center kind of bring those ships back up to the surface and float and inform the building. So in that way, working with the ships and the stories and that moment in history and letting it express itself came out poetically.
Hmm. Joining us on the line now is Leonard Germanara, who is a published poet, spoken word performer, and he is based in Waldoboro. Len, how would you describe your poetry in terms of style or format or themes?
Well, decidedly lyric free verse, and I write about nature, and some of the themes that we were talking about, I've heard you talking about, I find myself as well. I almost heard descriptions of ekphrastic poetry in the idea of, you know, the dealing with architecture and building a poem out from that. So is something that resonated with me in the conversation.
Well, I understand you're also responsible for the Mid-Coast Poetry Journal. Tell us about it and how it came about.
It came about through a conversation. A bunch of people in some of the library groups here in the Mid-Coast know each other, but hadn't really connected up in a tangible way, and we thought we'd find a way to do that by putting together a calendar. And the calendar of events under MidCoastPoetryCalendar.com is a way to bring people together. And that's really the essence of what we're trying to do, to bring a community together so that we can get together and enjoy the poetry of the coast. There's a lot of great poets out here. I just moved here about a year and a half ago, and I am in love with Maine. It's fantastic. I always thought of it as a vacation spot, and it is a year-round wonder.
I understand you're having three, am I reading this correctly, three celebrations this month?
Yes. The first one was in Thomaston last Sunday, and we had 40 people, and it was so much fun to have people stand up and look out and see how many people are sitting in chairs for a poetry reading and just say, wow. So that was last Sunday. The 23rd is in Rockport, and then on the 26th at the Waldoboro Library. So we're looking forward to having people get together and, you know, spend some time and get to know each other and, you know, build the community at an even greater level.
Len, before we let you go, one more time, say the way that people can find out, the website.
The website is Mid-Coast Poetry Calendar, all one word, all lowercase, no hyphens needed, .com.
Thank you so much for calling in. Len Germanara, a poet, and as you just heard, the brains behind the Mid-Coast Poetry Journal and Mid-Coast Poetry Calendar. We're going to go now to Signature Mimi. Signature Mimi is the current Portland Poet Laureate, also a songwriter and part of the duo Signature Soul. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for hosting.
Signature, tell us about your poetry.
Oh, my poetry, it ranges from poetry that's coming from my heart and soul, poetry that is reflective of my journey. When I think about poetry, I think about it as an anchor and an archive for this lifetime. And so it's something that helps me stay anchored in the moment, in the present times, and also allows me to reflect and remember where I've been, what I've experienced, and how I can reimagine things from before and also envision things going forward.
I understand your poetry
culminating.
Yeah, is integrated with music and the spoken word. And tell me about that. How is that different than songwriting? Tell us what we would expect if we went to see you.
I feel like I blend the songwriting within the poetry and in the spoken word. And so it's all together, depending on the piece and what's alive in that piece. And so sometimes you might hear me break into the song or into a chorus and then weave in some spoken word into that. And so it's just a blend. It's rhythmic. It's impassioned. And yeah, I feel like it moves people in a way that helps them also feel and connect into things that resonate with them. And, you know, some of the things that I'm speaking to, they'll relate to. And so I think that's been a special part of the journey, is being able to share pieces that I thought, you know, I was alone in experiencing this thing. But then after starting to share it out with folks, realizing that I wasn't alone in it, and that other people were feeling something similar or could relate to it or resonate with it in some way.
Mimi, are you performing anytime soon? And if so, when and where?
Let's see. Yeah, all the time, whether it's in the living room or in a conversation. There's always an opportunity.
I'm wondering where
share,
my audience can go see you.
Yes, for sure. Creatives Gathering is an open mic that I co-host every third Wednesday of the month at Mechanics Hall. We just had one last night. And so that's a great place to come out and share. And then on May 17th, there'll be a community open mic at the Portland Public Library. Some information is available on social media for those two events.
Wonderful.
And then I'll also be speaking at the Maine Arts Summit on May 1st as part of a teaching artist panel and discussion.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. That was Signature Mimi, who is Portland's Poet Laureate, spoken word artist, and songwriter with Signature Soul. I'm going to go to questions from the audience here. This is a fun question. It's from the children's book author, Chris Van Dusen, beloved children's book author. He writes, in children's picture books, rhyming manuscripts are often looked down upon. Several publishers won't even look at a rhyming story because they've seen so many poorly written stories in rhyme. My question is, are rhyming poems considered amateurish and less desirable in the professional poetry world as they are in children's book publishing? Is anybody, go ahead, Tari.
So it's a lot harder in English to find a rhyme. And so when we have rhymes in English, they often feel more like a lullaby or feel more like a song. And so in that way, people sometimes understand it as cheesy. And so I think we take, just to pull back Rosa into the conversation, we take some of our cues from Emily Dickinson with slant rhymes. Emily Dickinson and Eminem have that in common. Rhyme in poetry is not passe. It's not amateurish or juvenile. What it does offer is a very specific kind of rhythm depending on how the rhyme functions. So we tend to associate rhyme with children, but it's not that rhyming is always only reserved for children.
Mm. And when you say slant, you mean sort of like a near rhyme, what we think of a near rhyme?
Yes. So there's a pretty famous clip of Eminem talking about things that rhyme with orange. And, you know, it's a spectacularly difficult word to rhyme given there's a consonant cluster of an N and a G, and there's the kind of depending on your region, how you say it. But he has a list of things that he comes up with on the spot that rhyme with orange. And I apologize that I can't remember any of them. But those rhymes that almost get you there, those tend to be understood as maybe more clever, maybe more adult. But rhyming is a way of letting people know that you're meant to equate the two things that rhyme. You're meant to forge a relationship between those two things. So in that way, I think it also expands the poem in a way that is distinctively not juvenile.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Rosa.
You know, I love what you said, Tari. I look also for internal rhymes rather than typically rhymes that would be traditional at the end of a line, to look for those internal moments where there is a resonance that it repeats, slanted, as you mentioned, Tari, so beautifully. And so those internal rhymes for me are golden points. It's the musicality of the poem for me kind of, there's a deep resonance in there. If we can be lucky enough to have that occur, that internal rhyme that is sounds that repeat internally in the poem.
You know, talking about how poetry is changing, I think it was, 90 years ago or so that Robert Frost said, you know, writing poetry without rhyme or writing free verse is like playing tennis without a net. So my have things changed, right? We'll go to Fred calling from North Bridgeton. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for the program. This morning I wrote down just a few words, and I'm going to flesh it out some. The title being A Bug, A Man, A Planet. And please, if anybody feels like going with it, please do. I'm just a bug. I found a bug on the wall, and I did the best I could to put it in a good place outside the house. a man. I'm thinking of the guy who was sent down to Central America falsely, and who was in that that mega hell on Earth. A planet, of course, is our planet, and I'm part of. I feel and see the continuum, and I'm just feeling really strong sometimes these days in the plus and the minus as to what's going on.
Mm. Well, Fred, thank you so much for sharing that today. Fred calling from North Bridgeton. We're almost out of time, and I do want to get to one question because this is from Charles. It's a very simple question. Where in Maine can a new poetry writer have their poems published? And would you all recommend turning to Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We're lucky to have. Yeah. Because it's not easy, is it?
I mean, one of the other writers here at Bates, Jess Anthony, talked about poetry as a kind of punishing space. Because when you submit something, you don't really get feedback. You get, oh, it doesn't work for us. And so you see enough of that, you wonder whether or not the poems work for anybody. So publishing poetry is quite difficult for that reason. But Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance gives us a sense of community in Maine and a space to think through things with each other. And you know, shout out to the other caller who had the bug, the man, and the planet. It's a testament to how poetry can kind of unite what seemed like disparate things.
Well, I have to thank all of you for this hour, and happy Poetry Month to all of you. The voice you just heard, Dr. Therese Elise Pickens, who is an author, poet, and professor of English and Africana at Bates College. Dr. Rosa Lane was with us for the hour, poet, author, and architect. And Maya Williams, recent poet laureate and author. Today's sound engineer is Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, our guest is Senator Angus King. He's going to join us to discuss his response to executive actions and other top issues he's focused upon. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.